After months of talks and tweaks and travail, the state budget now awaits Governor Scott Walker's signature. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In this edition of the Week in Review, our two guests will weigh in on the 2015-17 spending plan and talk about the measures they would like to see Governor Walker veto, if any. Plus, we'll discuss the future of the Milwaukee Bucks Arena project, a lawsuit against Wisconsin's legislative maps, and other top state and national political stories. And we welcome your input, too. What would you like to talk about? What would you like to see Governor Walker veto out of the state budget? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let's welcome our guests. Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner in Wausau and a political activist. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for the invitation to join you and your listeners this morning.
And also with us is Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk about the budget. The Wisconsin state budget is on its way to Governor Scott Walker's desk after it passed the state assembly in a 52-46 vote in the early morning hours on Thursday. The assembly approved a $73 billion two-year spending plan. The Senate passed it on Tuesday. Some Republicans say that they made Governor Walker's budget better, and some of the bill's Republican supporters said this budget is good for taxpayers. Some Republicans voted against it, saying it contained too much policy. Democrats blasted the budget for a number of reasons. Representative Therese Brousseau said the budget rolled back longstanding policies like local control and faculty tenure and labor laws, and she and others called it the worst budget she had ever seen. So, Kevin Hermaning, a good budget for taxpayers or the worst one we've ever seen?
Well, I think it is a good budget for taxpayers. I do come down a little bit more on the line that taking away local control is, generally speaking, not a Republican philosophical view or position. I have not had the opportunity to look at the historical positioning that the state representative you cited has taken on issues of local control, but I would imagine, given that Democrats overall, generally speaking, are not those who favor local control, but rather more of a command economy, command central government, it's kind of, I would imagine, if we were to look at the historical voting pattern and statements of that state representative, we'd get the opposite view, but opposite indication of what really has been the case. But generally speaking, I mean, the governor got 80% of what he wanted as far as the budget cuts to the UW system, didn't get all of the things he wanted with regard to the rest of the UW system changes. The governor was, there's a lot of criticism that is, it's very ample. It's in some cases apt. The idea that the governor had been very busy traveling the country in anticipation and preparation for his upcoming presidential campaign starting on Monday, it's fair criticism. But let's face it, anytime we can see the taxpayers being a little bit better taken care of, as well as retaining the majority of issues regarding job creation policies and environmental protections. I know we're going to talk about that in a minute. I think it's a good budget deal. He may have the majority of the Republicans of the legislative houses on his side, but let us not forget that we also have 99 state representatives, all of whom, including those who are allied to him, are going to, they all have their own positions, as well as 33 state senators.
So, Louis Fortas, do you think this is a good budget or not?
I think it's a good budget for the governor's presidential aspirations. And I think it's, in terms of the tax breaks, I think as all of the budgets under Governor Walker have been very good for the wealthier taxpayers. I agree totally with Kevin on this idea of local control. The Republicans, that was one of their major platforms or planks in their platform was local control. And I'm in Milwaukee, in Milwaukee County, and what they have been doing is continually overriding the representatives on the Milwaukee County Board and making changes. It's just they've been taking all the power away from the county supervisors and putting it all in the hands of the county executive, who is a dubious character. And right now they have enabled the county executive to sell off any county properties other than parks, for example, to anyone he chooses or any whatever, without the approval or any ability to stop this process by the county supervisors. And he needs the comptroller and a real estate expert to kind of sign off on it. So they've basically turned, and the people in Milwaukee County do not want something like that, but it's been put in his hands, in the county exec's hands, by the state legislature. So these are examples of, I believe, what Kevin was talking about in terms of just cutting away at local control. And then, as you know, both the Democrats and the Republicans have done this idea. At the end, you stick in an omnibus amendment that has all kind of sleazy things that could never ever get through the legislative process in daylight, but they slip it in the middle of the night, and we're stuck with it. Yeah, and I think you will hopefully talk about a few of these things as the hour goes on.
Well, we will. Last-minute changes added to the budget in this motion 999 would help Enbridge Energy Company finish work on a 343-mile pipeline that's been stymied for months by Dane County officials. Dane County had demanded that the company buy additional insurance to cover any potential oil spills, but the budget language that was added by the Joint Finance Committee would take away the ability of counties and towns to impose such insurance requirements on a pipeline. So, some are saying Dane County is getting picked on in this budget. Lewis, what about that?
I think Dane and Milwaukee, it's where Democrats are. And so, yes, they're getting picked on. But the point is, I used to chair the insurance committee when I was in the legislature, and it was the Republicans who always, we need more insurance, we need more protection. And now Dane County is saying, let's just adequately insure. So if we do have a problem, it'll get covered. Look at the cost of that BP leak in Louisiana. That was the South Coast. I mean, that was over $20 or $30 billion. And so yes, we should be adequately insured. And this is what they override. So Dane County can't get adequate can't force adequate insurance on this. I mean, these are not what the Republicans used to talk about.
Well, Kevin, was that a justified thing to put in the budget?
I happen to believe that policy issues as well as fiscal issues should be able to stand on their own and should be debated in the light of day. I don't particularly like the idea of loading up any budget, federal or state budget, with what we would always call, when I was in the political campaigning days, Christmas tree amendments. They just hang them on there, and unlike a Christmas tree, they really didn't get the light of day because they were last-minute insertions by people who had pet projects that they were interested in. But, Louis, you and I both know that you can't insure against every single contingency. A person, a company, we can't go out and purchase. A corporation can't. It's not possible to purchase $30 billion or whatever number you threw out as far as the BP spill of insurance. And so you insure up to your ability to not be able to fund or pay for cleanups, in the case we're talking about now, out of the company's pocket. And so BP spent the rest of the money that wasn't covered by insurance out of their corporate profits. And the same thing that Enbridge did up in the Upper Peninsula when there was an oil spill a few years back, 5-6 years ago. Enbridge already has what, in my estimate, as an investment and insurance professional, to be considered adequate insurance levels We could harp on the idea maybe they should have 10-15% more, even double what they have right now. But as long as they have the ability to cover any cost of cleanup that could occur if a tragedy did happen, they've already spent $1.5 billion on infrastructure improvements and maintenance in the state in just the last 5 to 6 years. So I don't have a problem with Dane County not being able to rule the roost when it comes to something that is good for the overall state and regional economy. There are, you know, you look at things that might be specific to a local municipality. This isn't one of them. This is something, if this oil pipeline is expanded, it's something that's good for the region. And elected officials have to take on that role as well, even if sometimes we disagree with the outcome.
Yeah, Kevin, you've mentioned these Christmas tree amendments. Would you urge Governor Walker to veto any of these last-minute additions, policy items, or anything else in the budget? What would you want him to veto, if anything?
Well, I was thinking about this whole veto process, and we know in the state of Wisconsin the Constitution is quite broad in giving the governors of our state, and it was the same way under Governor Doyle and way back when under Governor Earle, as well as Tommy Thompson and short term for McCallum. We definitely have a very broad authority, the governors do in our state, to, in essence, create policy by changing numbers or even letters in sentences or words and entire meanings of what the legislature passes. So whatever is so I've been thinking about the fact that the governor is going to hit the road on Monday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And unless he sits at his desk all weekend, which I highly doubt is going to happen, we are going to really see what the governor's philosophical positioning is on all of the issues in the budget. This will be his document by the time it's done. He will own it. He will run for president on it and his other budgets. I think it will be a positive thing for his candidacy. Whether it gets him to the top or not, we'll see. But we will also find out who exactly he is most going to rely on from the legislature and from his advice team in Madison, because they're the ones who are going to do the heavy lifting over the next couple of days and weeks to actually put forth some of these changes.
All right, well, Louis Fortas, we'll talk much more about the budget after this break, but what, if anything, would you advise the governor to veto out of this budget?
Anything that is policy that is not related to the budget should not be in the budget. But because the budget has to be passed, this is what Kevin is calling the Christmas tree. You put something, you know, on that train because you know that train is going to move. And so anything that, like, for example, the payday lending expansion was helping one of the sleaziest industries in this country, that could never get something passed in the light of day. You slide it in the budget, and thank you, Alberta Darling from Milwaukee. These companies can get things passed, bad legislation, terrible legislation. But, I mean, that's the stuff that should be taken out of the budget. Anything that is not related to the budget, any kind of extraneous policy. And that's what happens in that late final amendment. It's full of things that are not related to the budget that could never get passed in the light of day, get slipped in at the final hour.
Louis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former state legislator. And Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner in Wausau and a political activist. And they are talking with us during this edition of the Week in Review right now, covering what's in that budget and what they say should come out of that budget. And we welcome your input too, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. Thank you. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking, as we do every Friday at this time, with two guests from different perspectives about the top state and national news stories of the week. Today, we're talking with Kevin Hermaning and Louis Fortas, and we invite your input on the stories making news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Louis Fortas brought up the last-minute budget addition when it comes to payday lenders. This budget addition would allow payday lenders to sell insurance, annuities, and give financial advice. Critics say payday lenders take advantage of the poor by charging high interest rates. The industry says its quick loans provide a valuable service. Kevin, you're a financial planner. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, good question, Joy. And Louis and I think maybe for moderately different reasons and some similar reasons agree on this issue. You know, the idea that people of any economic stripe or socioeconomic position lack access to financial services is foolish. I happen to believe that there are plenty of opportunities for folks in their communities to access virtually any type of insurance, any type of annuities, certainly financial advice. And one ought to be questioning whether or not the best financial advice being given to anybody is to seek out the highest interest lending companies, those people who are looking at essentially piggybacking on the naivety or the lack of knowledge or the poor financial condition of people in order to profit themselves is a little bit, in my view, it's wrongheaded. There are many opportunities for people to access this information and data, information and service. And so I happen to agree with Louis that so certainly we agree that it doesn't belong in the budget, but I happen to believe, independent of, frankly, what I do for a living, or maybe I'm more aware of what's available out there for people than to get financial advice from this.
Well, let's take a call from Cliff in Appleton now. Hi, Cliff.
Hi. My understanding was at the last minute they wanted to push through a change in the retirement system for Wisconsin state employees to dismantle the governing board and replace it with political appointees. I think that's outrageous because we've had one of the best systems for over 40 years, and I'd like to hear their comments about that.
Yeah, well, let's start with Kevin. That was a proposed change to make this board all lawmakers and take other experts and citizens off of it. It was removed from the state budget, so this did not happen, but was that a good idea or not?
You know, I'm going to be honest and tell you that the current makeup of the board at the present time is politically appointed. There are six lawmakers on it already, six of ten, but there are also individuals who get appointments based on maybe just because they're a member of the public doesn't mean that they're not going to share the same political stripe as the person who's appointing them. The same with the assistant DA or attorney general, I should say, or the state insurance commissioner. But these people are all appointed anyway. And so I would take exception to one point that the caller at least was asserting, I think, and that is that it was to undo the safety of the system or to take away the types of benefits that are already being granted through the Wisconsin Retirement System Pension Fund.
Well, Louis, let's get Louis to weigh in. Why do this? Why even propose it, even though it was taken out?
Well, Wisconsin worked very well for many, many years until apparently 5 years ago, everything we were doing apparently was wrong. When you would go to these national conferences, state legislators, Wisconsin was always held up as one of the models. We were one of the founders of all these professional agencies in the state legislature, like the Legislative Reference Bureau and our fiscal bureaus. And everybody looked to Wisconsin for leadership. And now, since Governor Walker has become governor, everything we have been doing apparently has been wrong. This has been working well. Wisconsin retirement system is a gem. People, you know, work 30 years in some kind of public service, and they rely on their pensions. They expect it to be professionally managed. And right now you have a half a dozen, six legislators out of the 10 board members. I think that's too many. I mean, I think, one or two legislators from each party, and then stack it with professional people with experience in this. I mean, this is not a controversial thing, the retirement board. I mean, certainly there are questions that come up once in a while, but this should be a professionally managed group of people.
Don't misunderstand. This board is not the entity which manages the money. This board is not the entity that makes decisions about the allocation of the portfolios and whether or not people are going to be able to have an adequate and secure retirement. This board is involved in policy, and this board is involved in advice, and they have an actuary on there. So I don't think it really matters who's on it, as long as they're using sound economic and retirement-based principles in their policy making. It's not the same thing as changing who's managing it. That's a totally
Let me clarify. Of course, these people aren't picking the stocks, but these are picking the people, choosing the people who are picking the stocks, and these are managing the people who are the people that manage the people who pick the stocks. So these are the policymakers. This is a board, like any other board, Kevin, and like any other board of directors. No, they're not involved in policy, but they are involved in choosing the people that are implementing the policies. They're not involved in the actual actions, but they are involved in the policies, I meant to say. And these are the people that choose the people who implement the policies they have. So it's important to have people that have a bigger vision, that understand the bigger picture. Some elected official who, you know, gets appointed to this because he or she didn't get appointed to some other board, said, well, we'll put you on this one instead. That's not good policy.
Yeah, let's talk about another last-minute addition to the budget, where workers would be allowed to voluntarily agree to work 7 days a week without a day off. Right now, employers have to allow their workers at least 24 straight hours of rest in every seven consecutive days. So, Lewis, what's your reaction to this change?
I'm pleased that they didn't put in some amendment that would enable child labor, because that seems to be the next step. Well, are there people that voluntarily would like to work 7 days in a row? Yes. And there are also many, many more people who would be leaned on by their bosses to work 7 days in a row who don't want to, who have families, who have little children at home. So this idea of, you know, it being voluntary is kind of naive. Yes, there are some people that, you know, probably young people working in the summertime or whatever, that definitely would like to work 7 days a week. But this is another kind of cutting back at workers' rights, that forcing people to work 7 days in a row without a day off, unless you're in an emergency situation, is something I think that we've risen above many years ago, and now we're going backwards again.
Kevin, we see some headlines that say, you know, Wisconsin is taking away the weekend. What's your reaction to this change?
Yeah, well, this is an area where I philosophically disagree with Lewis. I really have to say that employers also have rights. I also think that good employers are going to manage the companies that they own to run them in a profitable way, as well as in a way that rewards workers for hard work, but also grants workers relief and time off and bonuses and everything else and overtime pay, etc. And generally speaking, I think that if people don't like the company that they work for, they should not generally. I do believe that if people don't like the way that the employer is running the company, they really ought to change employers. I think that they ought to. I don't think you're going to see a lot of abuse of this. I think it's a good change. I think that, and he gave an example of young people. I literally remember working all summer long, and even during the school year when I was in high school and shortly after I graduated from high school before I went away to the service, where I would work 7 days a week and I would work overtime, and I loved the opportunity to learn and to grow and to be nurtured in a work environment. And I didn't feel abused by the employer because I volunteered to do it.
The legislature also, in the budget, passed a rollback of the state's prevailing wage law. This would repeal the law for all local government projects like those done by school districts and municipalities while keeping it in place for state projects. Is this a good thing or a bad thing, Kevin?
Well, I don't like prevailing wages. I think that it ought to be the wage that is representative of the municipality or the region of the state or nation that the taxpayers are asked to pony up. This is nothing more than philosophically, I believe this is nothing more than a transfer of taxpayer funds to workers, union workers in particular, who are able to rely on a law that is outdated and in some degree, some measure, really had no place in becoming law in the first place.
Lewis?
Well, first of all, the fact that the Republicans had a lot of trouble getting the votes to pass this, where they were going to actually take it out of the budget and all, and deal with it as a separate bill, leads you to believe that there's something wrong with this, what's going on here. This is another anti-union policy, and the prevailing wage was something that was designed to ensure that people are getting paid fairly. And this whole idea of, I think some of these lawmakers ought to go back and take a little economics 101. I used to teach economics, and this is some pretty basic stuff. If employees do not get a fair salary, they can't go out and purchase things, so other businesses can grow. I mean, it's basically demand economics. And austerity and this continually cutting back just doesn't work. If you look at Europe, what's going on in Europe, they've been struggling for the last 7 or 8 years to try to get out of a recession because of austerity policies. Even Henry Ford, who was as right-wing as could be, understood that he had to pay his workers enough money so they could afford to buy his cars. And this is what's being lost. I mean, if you continue to cut back on public employees, these public employees then, if they don't have money, they can't go to restaurants, they can't go to theaters, so other people lose their jobs. It's just short-sighted thinking, economic thinking. You have to stimulate economy, not keep cutting back at it.
This isn't a public employee issue, frankly.
Let me take a call from John in Milwaukee, and then, Kevin, you can respond. John?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I'm 25 years old. I'm currently working two jobs, born and raised in Milwaukee. I can promise you that there is not a single person that wants to work 7 days a week continually. There's no point. I'm working two jobs right now because I need it for the money. You know what I'm saying? And there's no one. And then as far as, then you should find another job. What other job? Could you supply me a job right now? Because personally, I've searched the job market for a long time, and the best I could come up with is two part-time jobs, and I'm working 60 to 70 hours a week. I don't have any benefits, and I'm still just barely making ends meet. I don't want to work 7 days a week, but I have to, and to say that I should just find another job, or it's not available. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And no one wants to do that. All work, no play makes Jack a dull boy. It's pretty simple stuff, I think. I was a bit taken back by the comment saying that I should just find another job or I should just leave my employer. It's not that simple. It's not that easy. Life is much more complex, and everybody is doing the best they can.
John, thanks. The state budget also replaces all references in state law to a living wage, defined as the level of pay needed to provide minimum comfort, decency, physical and moral well-being, with minimum wage. So it would say minimum wage, not living wage. Kevin, how do you react to all three of these different items that this is an anti-worker budget?
Well, nobody is being forced to work 7 days under the law. There's no law that says that workers have to work 7 days in a row without 24 hours of consecutive break. There's no law that was passed or might be signed into law through the state budget signature of Governor Walker that says that every employer must force their workers to work 7 days consecutively in a row. And so most people are pretty competent in knowing and gleaning and understanding that if an employer abuses their employees, that word is going to get out and they're going to leave, they're going to find other options, competitors to that business are going to crop up, and opportunities will exist for people who might only have to work 5 days a week and maybe even get paid more and provided benefits, etc. So I think that this, and nobody said that that this young man should be forced to work 7 days in a row just because it's allowed by an employer. And so, but I think we were talking about prevailing wage, and you know, if you have all of these expenses drummed on top of the normal expense just because the government artificially sets a level that should be paid, it removes the entire philosophical concept that it completely reverses somebody's mentality of how they shop at Kohl's or where they shop for automobiles, where they try to get the best deal. If we can get, at a less expensive cost, great services, excellent construction, why wouldn't we as a government, as a society, as taxpayers paying a government, seek the best deal, not the worst deal? That's what prevailing wage does. It forces the worst deal to the people who are paying for it. In our personal lives, we would never behave that way.
Yeah.
What is wrong with us?
You know, and I was trying to wrap up the various labor-related bills altogether, or parts of the budget. Do you, Louis Fortas, view this as an anti-worker budget?
Yes. And what we're looking at is, you know, what Kevin is saying, you know, why don't they get the best deal or whatever. You know, we all want to negotiate and get the best deal, whatever we buy, and including in employing people. But there are certain standards you have to have, some basic floors. You have certain health and safety standards. You can't put people in environments where, you know, it might be a little cheaper not to have ventilation. And so, you know, you can't do that. We impose a floor. We say, listen, you know, we're a civilized group of people. You can't, you know, force someone to work in a very unhealthy environment. It's the same thing with wages. You have minimum wage, you have the prevailing wage when it comes to, construction jobs. So, these are just floors. And Kevin's absolutely right. No, there is no law saying, you know, that can force, that then forces employers to force their employees to work 7 days in a row. But, you know, when the economy goes down, and the economy, we just came out of the worst recession since the Great Depression, and jobs are scarce, and employees are frightened, and some employer wants them to be working 7 or 10 days in a row or whatever, and the employer is going to fight back. This is an at-will state. If you don't have a union, any kind of protection like that, you can be fired because the boss doesn't like, you know, the shoes that you're wearing that day or whatever. That's what we have in the state of Wisconsin. We have an at-will state. And so what you try to do is you try to build in a few basic floors so employees are treated with, you know, some level of, you know, respect for their health, safety, and their economic well-being.
I need to jump in as we are past break time. Louis Fortas is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Kevin Hermaning is a financial planner in Wausau and a political activist. They are talking with us during this edition of the Week in Review. We'll be back in just a moment with more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network, where we are reviewing the top state news stories of the week with two guests from different perspectives, Kevin Hermaning and Louis Fortas. And you can join in too, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. One item that did not get voted on this past week was a new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says he does not have the votes to pass the bill in its present form. He's apparently considering a ticket surcharge to help pay for the project. He says it's possible there could be a vote on this financing plan next week. As it stands, about half of the $500 million Milwaukee Bucks arena would be public support or taxpayer support. Louis, you're in Milwaukee. Should lawmakers support this plan?
Well, first of all, I think the vast majority of people in Milwaukee want to keep the Bucks in Milwaukee for a lot of different reasons. And I do think the arena will be built, and it's just a question of how is it going to be financed. And I thought things were going along fairly well. The Milwaukee County Executive came in and kind of messed things up with his own plan that the Republicans jumped on, thinking, you know, this is a great deal, and it's coming from, you know, somebody from Milwaukee County who is basically working, as many people feel, against the taxpayers of Milwaukee County. So he came up with an idea that would decrease the amount of money coming from the state and put a lot more on the Milwaukee County, and ultimately his plan doesn't work, which most people claim it won't, will end up on the taxpayers of Milwaukee County. So he basically weakened, I think, something that was going through that would have been bargained down a little and would have been properly negotiated and would have worked out well for the, I think, for probably all parties involved. And now it's kind of thrown into chaos. And but I do believe at the end of the day, we will have an arena and the Bucks will still be in Wisconsin, which is good for Wisconsin. Not only Milwaukee, but it's good for Wisconsin.
You agree, Kevin?
Well, I haven't seen an answer to the question, why didn't Herb Kohl have Jim Doyle and the Democrats in the state legislature build a new arena back when Herb Kohl was a senator and owned the Bucks? Now, that may not be pertinent these days in 2015, but the idea that a state which is having issues with funding for the UW system, for building new highways and roads and bridges and keeping up our infrastructure so our economy can continue to hum, is helping a dozen talented athletes run around a basketball court really going to help the overall Wisconsin economy? Is it so much going to damage the institution of a great state like Wisconsin or those who lead it of either political party if we don't have an NBA team in the city of Milwaukee? There are a lot of great cities across the U.S. that don't have NBA teams, that don't have NFL teams, that don't have, I mean, why does Green Bay have an NFL team but not Milwaukee? I mean, let's face it, the people who want to have basketball in Milwaukee ought to be the ones who are going to pay for basketball in Milwaukee. You shouldn't ask the person who owns the small bait shop up in Minocqua or who owns a clothing store in Toma to have to pay for it. It's a silly conversation that I just don't understand why we've been wasting so much time talking about it.
We'll talk more about budget issues during our state capitol report on Monday. State government reporter Sean Johnson will cover Governor Walker's budget vetoes, should they happen over the weekend, and we'll get reaction from our guest lawmakers, outgoing Republican State Senator Paul Farrow and Assembly Minority Leader Peter Barca. That's our state capitol report on Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. A group of Democrats are asking a federal court to toss Wisconsin's legislative district maps that were drawn by Republicans in 2011. They argue the lines were drawn to benefit one party, Republicans. Kevin, is this lawsuit going to go anywhere? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that the lawsuit is going to have much is going to have very much in the way of legs. I guess we're going to we could have had the same conversation, but from the other political parties, several years, 10 years earlier, 20 years earlier. One of the benefits of winning elections is you get to make the rules. I don't have a problem with that.
What do you think of this this lawsuit, Kevin? I mean, sorry, Lewis.
Well, I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but I do think this issue is something that has to be dealt with. I think Kevin alluded to the fact that kind of both parties would do the same thing, and I think the to the winner goes the spoils, as they say. But what happened here is they just. It's got so extreme. And one of the things that everyone, I think or most people in this country are concerned about is the polarization. I mean, you have the, the extreme right of the Republicans and what they say is the, left of the Democrats. And the moderates, the middle of the roaders have all been defeated by primaries from the extremes. And so you have a very polarized, country right now. And that's definitely not a healthy thing. And one of the reasons you have this polarization is the redistricting. When you make a solid Democratic seat or a solid Republican seat, then what you have is you're not worried about the other party winning, so you keep getting pulled further and further to your extreme. And as a result, if you try to be moderate, you'll get taken out from the right if you're a Republican or from the left if you're a Democrat until you, either move over to the extreme, or you'll be taken out by somebody who is from that extreme. And then you end up with two extremes, and that's what's polarizing, one of the major things that's causing this polarization. Iowa has a commission that draws the lines, and again, there's always subjectivity. You can't do it, totally, quote, objective, but Iowa seems to be doing very, very well with their process. Is it perfect? No. Is it a lot better than most of the other states? Absolutely. And we, the thing I fault both parties for is when, one party controlled the assembly and the other party controlled the Senate, that was the perfect time to say, okay, we're both equal in this right now. Let's do the right thing and let's step back from this idea of drawing our own lines and let's leave it to as objective a body as we possibly can find. Yeah. Understanding nothing's perfect.
Let me get in another item or two before we need to wrap up. The state assembly passed a bill banning non-emergency abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. It now goes to Governor Walker, who is expected to sign it, and then it will likely wind up in the courts, as has happened in other states, finding this unconstitutional. Lewis, is this bill a waste of time, or what do you think?
Well, it'll probably end up in the courts, but it will definitely end up on the campaign trail, and Governor Walker will be touting, especially in Iowa, which has a very strong fundamentalist Christian Republican voting base, that he did this additional thing on the anti-abortion front. So it will definitely be a big political plus for the conservative efforts of the governor. Is it good public policy? No. And it doesn't even provide any exceptions for sexual assault or even incest. This is not good policy.
Kevin, very briefly, I'm sorry, we're almost out of time.
Well, first of all, those other issues he just raised at the end aren't pertinent to this, frankly. Those are dealt with in other law. But I think this will help the governor on the campaign trail, though I don't think it's at all why it's become law. I think that it's a good public policy that is based on good medical evidence.
Let me, in our just 30 seconds each, what advice do you have for Governor Walker as he has this budget on his desk and he's preparing for his announcement on Monday that he's going to run for president? Kevin first.
Well, I think the governor's responsibility, first and foremost, is to the taxpayers and the citizenry of Wisconsin. I think he's going to veto provisions of the budget, which are going to improve the overall document that was crafted by a lot of different people and aides to state legislators. And only secondarily should he be looking to his own political future as he's signing the budget. I think, frankly, the governor's got a pretty good moral compass on things like this, in my opinion.
Very briefly, Lewis.
I think he should look at the budget from the old established Republican Party idea and eliminate anything that encroaches on local control.
Let's get to our Week in Review quiz. While the state capitol building was evacuated on Wednesday due to a bomb threat, assembly lawmakers who were discussing the budget killed some time with an impromptu beer summit across the street. Speaker Robin Voss was later asked what kind of beer he was drinking, but he didn't answer because he said he didn't want to play favorites. But there are pictures and people like to talk. So our question is, what was Robin Voss's beer of choice? What was Robin Voss drinking during the beer summit this week? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We will get you to answer on air, and if you are correct, we will send you a iHeart WPR magnet. So let's go to Lisa in Kendall, who wants to guess. Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
So what kind of beer was Assembly Speaker Robin Voss enjoying during the Bomb Scare Beer Summit?
Spotted Cow.
You are correct, Lisa. It was Spotted Cow. Meanwhile, Majority Leader Jim Steinke of Kaukauna said he downed a Miller Lite while others were sipping on water and soda. Voss says it's good to enjoy some collegiality and that it may have even made debate more productive. Capitol Police, by the way, gave the all clear to re-enter the building at about 5:30, and the assembly debated and passed the budget as we've been discussing. Lewis, you've served in the legislature. How important was it to have a beer summit once in a while with your legislative colleagues?
They need more of them, and they need to be across the aisle. And that's the problem right now is when we did have the beer summit, it was bipartisan across the aisle, and I think we had friends on the other side of the aisle that we valued as much as the friends on our side of the aisle, and that we are missing desperately right now.
And, Kevin, what was your takeaway from the beer summit?
Well, yeah, I mean, I thought that I read that the beer that was poured was the Bud Light, which probably isn't really worth consuming in any other fashion anyway.
I didn't hear beer. So would you have had a Spotted Cow at that beer summit, Kevin, or something else?
Yeah, you know, I probably would have had either a Spotted Cow or maybe a Miller Light.
There we go. Lewis, what would your beer summit beer be?
I don't know where they were, but I would go whatever the local craft brew is.
Sounds good.
Of course right. You would, with the wind.
Discover your new favorite band on Central
right.
Times.
Thank you both very much for being with us. Kevin Hermaning, financial planner in Wausau and political activist, and Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee and a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly. Thanks very much to Bill Martins, who produced this program and directed this program. And thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Kayla Blato for on-air production. Again, on Monday, we will have more on the state budget, our state capital report. Every Monday from 7 until 8, we'll talk with two state lawmakers and Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. Have a great weekend, everybody. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.